It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the cinemas and on DVD. Get ready for...
Wait for it!
Film Sociology with WFYI's film guru.
Kaiser Soze!
No, that's Matthew Soze.
It's such a fine line between stupid and clever. Yeah.
Let's find out how thin the line is. Here's your host, Matthew Soze.
What do you plan to do after the All-Star game to get better?
Buy you a new jacket.
Hello there, film lovers. Welcome to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. Also on Facebook, also on Twitter, at Matthew Soce. The show is available as a podcast. It's also available on iTunes. We have a blog. Do we have any new stuff on the blog? You can go check. So we need more staff picks.
Yes.
So you can check those out at...
filmsociology.tumblr.com.
The voice you just heard, the one and only host of The Cool Down. Yeah, there's only one Kobe Slagle.
There is. There's a website you can go to. You can like put your name and see how many...
Kobe Slagles there are?
Yeah, how many people of your first name, how many people of your last name, and combined there are in the United States.
And how many Kobe Slagles are there?
One.
That's
you're looking at it.
Sucker.
Yep.
Who's got two thumbs and is the only Kobe Slagle on Earth? That guy. She's like, there's only one me. Because I'm deadly. I will win.
I'll win.
That's Kobe Slagle. And give Curtis a rest.
I don't know if you noticed, well, I know you noticed, but I don't know if you remember last year this time, we also played that Shaq intro because
it's All-Star Weekend. You actually pay attention to the All-Star Weekend.
Yes, I do.
Okay.
I don't watch the game.
Yeah,
but I like all the auxiliary stuff on Saturday.
I don't know whether there's less defense, the Pro Bowl or the All-Star game in basketball, NBA All-Star game.
I don't know.
That's a tough call. But you like watching the dunk and the 3-point.
Yes, I love All-Star Saturday.
The celebrity whatever.
The dunk, of course. The 3-point shootout's cool. The skills challenge.
But not the fun. Okay. There should be a fundamentals challenge.
Well, there is the skills challenge.
Yeah.
You have to do chest bounce passes and make layups and
white dunks.
Weave in and out of cones and stuff to mimic defenders, even though you never see.
Is there somebody there with a broom to block their shots?
No, there is no blocking. You just go up and you make a layup.
Wow,
mm-hmm.
Riveting.
Yeah, that's and they pick a legend from a team, a current player from the team, and a player from the city's WNBA team.
Because the WNBA needs all the help they can get.
Yes, they do. Do they? I don't think they have an All-Star weekend. Surely they do.
Don't call me Shirley.
Mm-hmm.
Better go check. Yeah, see, I don't watch the NBA All-Star weekend. I'm too busy getting a migraine headache looking at the Pistons standing. So,
and very excited this year because two of your Indiana Pacers.
Mine?
My Indiana Pacers.
I see. We.
The Royal Indiana Pacers are going to be competing. Paul George in the 3-point shootout and Gerald Green in the dunk contest. And a lot of people saying that Gerald Green is going to be taking it home.
What does he get?
He gets a trophy. He's already won it once.
How does it help the Pacers win a championship?
It doesn't.
There you go.
Well,
welcome to the sports portion of Film Sociology, which we often, if it's not sports, it's food or stuff around work that we open up the show with.
I wonder if there are people betting like, what's the over-under? They start off this week with food.
You know what? If you're betting on Film Sociology, you need serious, serious help. My gosh. So, yeah. So there is that. Despite this, however, I do not have my Haterade. Somebody in this building left out little bottles of orange juice because there's been a bug going around town. And I guess apparently going around in this building. So I will have my orange juice. before I head out to Speak Truth to Power, which is going to happen tonight and tomorrow afternoon at Earlham College, which my lovely wife is associated with, and I'll have a small cameo. I might as well get the shameless plugs in now. Opening March 1st and running the 1st, 2nd, the 8th, and the 9th at Scottish Rite Cathedral is a production of Horton Foote's fantastic play, The Trip to Bountiful, which is directed by yours truly. So it'll be a shame plugging that. But, Kobe, I know I'm distracting you right now, but I wanted to share... Yeah, I'm distracting you while the show is happening. I wanted to share our latest collection to the show ID collection. I pulled it up on the screen. Yeah, there's that. So,
oh, you want that now?
I want that now.
Hi, I'm Lydia Bastianich, and you're listening to Film Sociology on WFYI.
Yes, I will be talking
Hi,
with...
I'm Lydia.
She's so excited. But yes, I'll have a conversation with Chef Lydia Bastianich in a little bit. So what were you looking up? You were on Bleacher Report, weren't you?
No, I was. I'm trying to figure. Why is this thing looping? There we go.
I don't know.
Holy cow! All right.
Yeah, you don't want to loop it, or Looper.
No.
Pretty good film. What were you looking at?
I was looking up the schedule for All Star Weekend.
Now, during the film show.
I do research for a number of things.
I see you're multitasking. Yeah. All right, and you're multitasking. All right, let's talk about what's opening this weekend. Of course, A Good Day to Die Hard. I think that opened yesterday. Did it make everything open on St. Valentine's Day because that's a very important holiday?
That opened yesterday. I don't know.
I think that did. So, yeah, Bruce Willis. Let's put it this way.
Is there really anything else this weekend?
Yeah, there's a few, which we'll get to. I told Uncle Matt told the story about being an extra in Die Hard 2, and honestly, I really have no desire to see this. Not really. I prefer receding hairline diehard Bruce Willis as opposed to bald and getting massive checks Bruce Willis. We also have Beautiful Creatures with Viola Davis, Emma Thompson, Emmy Russum, Jeremy Irons. The animated feature Escape from Planet Earth featuring the voices of Brendan Fraser, Jessica Alba, Rob Corddry, James Gandolfini, Craig Robinson, and Gina's favorite, Sarah Jessica Parker.
Yeah, the girl I want to gag.
And Safe Haven, the latest movie based on a Nicholas Sparks novel with Julianne Hough and what's his name? Oh, Josh Duhamel. Or as the Non Nouveau put in their headline today, you're going to love this, Sparks can't fly in this potboiler.
It's awful. I don't even know what else to say. It's just awful. Don't be bothered by it.
See, Sparks is, Nicholas Sparks, the author.
Because they don't think
And they
it's
don't
good.
There's any electricity between the two. And then, of course, Kobe's favorite term, potboiler, which we talked about off air. It's like this word is the equivalent of buying a red car because now you're seeing it everywhere.
Yep.
So
that's what happens.
It is what happens. So that potboiler is also open. But... Also opening today, the Academy Award-nominated film Amour, which is up for Best Foreign Film, and is, I think, a lock for Best Foreign Film. But it's also up for Best Picture. It's up for Best Director, Michael Haneke, as well as Best Actress, and that would be Emmanuelle Riva. And, of course, it is French, which means I love playing foreign film trailers on the film show. Kobe, hit it.
Y'a quelqu'un?
Maman?
Tout à l'heure, quand je suis entrée, je me suis rappelé comment je vous écoutais toujours faire l'amour quand j'étais petite. Ça me donnait le sentiment que vous vous aimiez et qu'on resterait toujours ensemble.
Qu'est-ce qu'il y a? Qu'est-ce qu'il y a?
It's not okay. Qu'est-ce qui se passe?
Tu ne vas quand même pas malmener ton image sur tes vieux jours.
Je m'en garderai bien. Mais c'est quoi mon image?
Tu es un monstre parfois.
Non mais dis-moi, qu'est-ce qu'il y a? T'es devenu fou?
Assieds-toi.
Non mais je veux pas m'asseoir. Qu'est-ce qui se passe ici?
in the trailer, he turns off a stereo. Thus, the soundtrack on the trailer stops as well. Mm. This is up for 5 Academy Awards, and it, you know, director Michael Haneke has given us some very uncomfortable films in recent years. Films like Cachet, both the original and the American remake, Funny Games. That was the American version was the one with Tim Roth and Naomi Watts being terrorized by the young men that live in their neighborhood, and of course most recently White Ribbon. Now, for those who don't speak or listen in French, the story is you have an older couple. They're retired music teachers, and the wife, played by Emmanuel Riva, has a couple of attacks, a couple of strokes, and the husband, pardon my French on this one, Jean-Louis Trinigant. Not Trinidad.
I don't know. I can't verify that.
That's okay. Decides to take care of her at home. Now, there's nurses come and go, but he's really determined to keep his wife at home, much to the chagrin of maybe the nurses and members of his own family, as well as his friends and what have you. Now, this is a slow-paced film. I don't think it's a slow film. It does clock in about 2.5 hours, because this is a film about people that are of a retirement age. And what's really cool this year is that in the Best Actress category, you have the youngest and the oldest Best Actress nominees in Academy Award history. Of course, the young lady from Beasts of the Southern Wild was 9, and Emmanuel Riva is 85. And she puts in an excellent performance. And part of it is, yes, there's the acting tricks of being quote-unquote disabled. She's had a couple of strokes, and the immobility, I should say, along with the emotional baggage of, I mean, it's a really, really solid performance and well-deserved. I was glad that it got into the top 5 for Best Actress. That being said, and this has happened in the past, got to give credit to the actor playing the husband, because that's who she bounces off of. This reminded me a lot of Peter Falk bouncing off of, not literally, off of Jenna Rollins in John Cassavetes's film A Woman Under the Influence, as well as Gordon Pinsett, who was the screen husband of Julie Christie in my favorite film from 2006, Away From Her. So strong performances by both. The story pushes the storyline, and keeping her at home not only pushes the limits of their marriage, but their own existence. And it's hard to watch, but not in a brutal sense like a Funny Games, or in a voyeuristic, uncomfortable sense like Cachet. It is just watching an elderly couple still trying to be together under really, really difficult circumstances. And as somebody who is directing a play about an old woman that wants to return to her childhood home one more time before she dies, it really rings strong. So it was kind of a surprise. I think people get surprised when a foreign film gets into the Best Picture category. I think they assume it should stay into the ghetto that is Best Foreign Film. And the same thing with animated features. You know, it was a big deal that Beauty and the Beast finally got a Best Picture. You know, an animated feature got a Best Picture nomination with Beauty and the Beast. Now that we've already had a few, like Up and Toy Story 3. So it is not relegated to one category. You know, it's not the American Academy Awards. It's the Academy Awards in general. So, anyway, does it have a shot? Probably it's got probably a lock for Best Foreign Film. Maybe Emmanuel Riva for Best Actress. I don't know. We'll talk more about this on next week's show when the Oscars are coming up. But again, it's a strong film. Probably not for everybody. Probably not something you want to end the date night with. We've talked about that, Mr. Slagle.
Yes.
Tracy Mitchell, the Aaron Andrews of film sociology, the Charlene of film sociology. Those who know The Fighter know what I'm talking about. Anyway. Definitely worth checking out.
Now that was a good movie.
Okay, moving on. How are we on time? All right?
Yep.
Okay. We're just going to keep going, I think. New on DVD and Blu-ray this week. Actually, let's play the DVD intro. What the hell? What the hell? We're not throwing all the books out the window, but maybe a couple of them.
All right.
You got it?
Oh, yeah, just a second.
No?
Here. What?
I threw you off.
Well.
Just when you thought I was going to zig, I zag.
Are either one of these any good? Sir?
What?
Are either one of these any good?
I don't watch movies.
Well, have you heard anything about either one of them?
I find it's best to stay out of other people's affairs. You know who I can do without? I could do without the people in the video store.
Which ones?
All of them.
What would you get for a 6-year-old boy who chronically wets his bed?
So do you have any new movies in?
Do you have that one with that guy who was in that movie that was out last year?
They never rent quality flicks. They always pick the most intellectually devoid movie on the racks.
Ooh, Navy SEALs!
It's like in order to join, they have to have an IQ less than their shoe size.
Just go open the video store.
Yeah, open the video store!
Blockbuster Video! Wow, what a difference!
It still cracks us up.
Well, it's funnier having revisited the music of Wesley Willis earlier this week.
Yeah, it was. Yes, it was, because we have a new employee who is not familiar with Mr. Willis's work, and we think
or any of the other cool things that we like.
Yeah, we're trying to here at Film Sociology, we're trying to work on the new employee orientation, which we think will last about what, 2-3 weeks.
Okay, have you seen this?
Yeah,
have you seen this?
It involves YouTube clips and going out for beers and going out to cool restaurants like Maxine's. Maxine's is okay,
yeah.
Right?
Oh yeah,
over. Hipster named restaurants.
Oh yeah, no. What you did? I say no. I don't have a problem with Maxine's at all. I love Maxine's.
They're not hipster.
No, they're not.
No, but you could dress as a hipster and go there.
No, you could. But I think there are some hipster places that are serving that are starting to serve chicken and waffles.
That's good. Unless when we'll talk about the potato chips.
Yeah,
that's all right. Anyway, yeah, orientation. Got to work on that. This week on DVD and Blu-ray. Is quite a good week. I looked at the there's 5 main new titles that are out, and I recommend all these films for various reasons and different levels of recommendation. The biggest film opening on Blu-ray this week,
Skyfall.
Is Skyfall. The
yes.
I don't need to review it. We just have him screaming that it's great.
It's also an art film.
It could have been an art film. It's
Wow, that'd be some good film in there, Mr. Soci.
You're just running through these? We'll get to him. We will get to him. Skyfall, I think one of the things that critics do, because we're cynical, and even though I don't have my hater egg mug with me, is as soon as the nominations come out for the Academy Awards, we talk about, of course, what didn't get nominated. Obviously, the big talk this year was Ben Affleck not getting Best Director nod for Argo, even though it's up for Best Picture. But for me, I think the big omission is Skyfall from Best Picture. I like the film that much. This is Daniel Craig's third film as James Bond. You have a really fine director with Sam Mendes, Roger Deakins, who I would love to see win Best Cinematography. Yes, we are pro cinematographers here at Film Sociology. This is the man who has worked with the Coen brothers, among other filmmakers, and he does incredible work. And we've talked before, by the way, in another shameless plug, you can listen to Hammer and Nigel's podcast. I was on the show last night talking about the Academy Awards. And one of the things that sometimes actors are relocated in certain categories because they have a better chance at winning. A great example was in 1979 with Meryl Streep, who won the Oscar for Best Supporting Actress in Kramer versus Kramer, even though I think it was a leading role. That being said, this year, Christoph Waltz has a really good chance of being a 2-time winner in Best Supporting Actor for Django Unchained. Not to give anything away, but he's in the majority of the film. Granted, it's not called German Dentist Turned Bounty Hunter Unchained, but I think Waltz should have been a Best Actor nominee. And the reason why he should be in the Best Actor nominee, so Javier Bardem can take his place in Best Supporting Actor. Bardem is that good as the villain in Skyfall. And should have been up for Best Picture. I guess you can have a minimum of 10, or you got a maximum of 10, or up to 10 films. We had 9 this year. I think it could have taken the number 10 spot. You have all of the thrills that you want with a Bond film, the over-the-top, ridiculous action scenes.
As Emma said, you have him hanging out with at least 3 chicks.
Emma said chicks.
Yep.
Not me.
Yep.
Emma did.
Emma said chicks.
She did say chicks. But you have all the action that you want, and then different aspects of the Bond series that we've never, that has never really been addressed. Part of it is, and this is why it was number three on my top 10 list, a lot of it was dealing with Bond's immortality, dealing with M's immortality, played by Judi Dench. Because we've always seen Bond as kind of this unstoppable character, and in this one he isn't. And I mean, they've addressed this briefly at times, but they've never really gone that far into it. And that's why it's not only an excellent Bond film, it's an excellent film, period. You know, 2 hours and 20 minutes, but it still moves. It is just absolutely a fun, fun evening of cinema. Mm-hmm. And you don't have to be a Bond fan to enjoy this film.
True.
And you also got, of course, Judi Dench. Ralph Fiennes shows up. You have Albert Finney near the end, not really giving away much. But yeah, it is just a lot of fun. Mr. Slagle, your thoughts?
Yes. Also, I did not see the second Craig Bond movie.
That would
Quantum
be Quantum of Solace.
Yes. Did see
Casino Royale.
Casino Royale, and couldn't really get on board with the we're trying to give it like a retro look, but he's still got all these modern gadgets, and that's the kind of spin we're going to have on these new Bond films.
Really?
I didn't really like it. But then. There was just a ton of hype around Skyfall before it came out. People talking, "Oh, this could possibly be the best Bond film ever," and all this sort of talk. And then you see it, and it kind of stands alone. You don't need to see the two leading up to it,
no,
to see this. And I mean, really, you could kind of, if you're not a James Bond fan, I feel like you could watch this kind of as an introduction to the James Bond franchise.
I took I took wife and daughter to see this, and Lynn also enjoyed it, and she's, you know, as much as I give her nicknames of other Bond women in the past, that's right, that really shouldn't be a surprise to anybody, Miss Galore, Miss Onatopp. So yeah, they enjoyed it as well. And this is, of course, part of Emma's Bond education. So
Bond education.
We're working on that. But yeah, this was a lot of fun.
Yeah. And I hadn't seen a lot of Bond movies before that. I mean, I'd seen.
You know why? Because you have two piles of DVDs that you need to get to.
Yeah, I mean, I'd seen Goldfinger as part of What Is Kobe Watching, and then
you said Goldeneye, I think, was your first Bond film.
No,
in theaters.
In theaters. Casino Royale.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'd seen Casino Royale, Goldfinger, and this. And
oh my gosh,
it was
an odd trio.
It was awesome.
Okay,
I liked it.
All right, so that is out, and yeah, that will be purchased, of course. With all the bells and whistles. Anytime we do it, we sound like excited 12-year-old boys or the Hansbro brothers. Okay. Also on DVD and Blu-ray this week, this was a big hit with the Indiana Film Journalists Association, the Doughy White Guys, sans Gina.
Oh.
This is called Perks of Being a Wallflower. And this is a story of an outsider who enters high school and gets in with an off branch of the in crowd, including Emma Watson. And what made this film so enjoyable was it's a far more realistic portrayal of high school compared to the films of John Hughes. I know Melissa Davis is shaking her fist at anger in my direction right now at that comment, and the stuff that you see on the Disney Channel and Nickelodeon. Much more down to earth. It's not about wacky parties. Well, there's wacky parties, but it's not of a sitcom nature. It's about the weird emotional bonds between a guy and a girl, especially with the Watson character. You know, is it friends? Is it something else? And you don't know all the answers because you're a freshman in high school. Some answers don't come clear and quick. So definitely worth checking out. I had one pop culture flaw that kind of bugged me because one character who knew about, I think they knew about the Smiths. And they knew about Depeche Mode, but they didn't know any music by David Bowie. That kind of bugs me. I'm that person. Really? You listen to this and this, but you had no clue who David Bowie was? Okay. Anyway, if you want a more realistic look at high school without satire, without sitcom wackiness, that's definitely worth checking out. Do you have?
Oh.
My God.
Now that was a good movie.
I thought we were just rolling through these.
We are rolling through these. Also out on DVD and Blu-ray, I'm waiting to see if you will rent this, especially for Fair Sweet Bianca, The Man with the Iron Fist. produced, directed, co-written, and starring the RZA.
Yeah. Jared said this was really good.
This
too.
Was a lot of fun. Obviously, because
he knows his kung fu.
RZA does know his kung fu movies big time. I've heard a couple of commentaries on some of the Dragon Dynasty DVDs, and he knows his stuff. And I mean stuff. His knowledge of it is really, really well recorded, and he finally gets a chance to make one. And this is a throwback to those. You weren't around because you weren't around, but I remember seeing kung fu movies in this trashy downtown theater in downtown Flint. I guess we didn't call them grindhouses. We didn't know what that was called. We just went to scary downtown movie theaters and saw the Bruce Lee films and the knockoff of the Bruce Lee films. So this is about a tournament, and there's Lucy Liu looking a lot like she did in the Kill Bill Volume 1. Nothing wrong with that. Russell Crowe has a fun time in this as an English brawler. It's kind of reminiscent. I think it's...
Does he have a more fun time in this than he does in Les Mis?
I think he does. Okay. I think he does. Not as much screen
time. Will the audience have a more fun time with this than they will with Les Mis?
Apparently, more folks had more fun with Les Mis. Not fun, but more had a good time of Les Mis than you. So...
I don't see it.
You don't see it? That's fine. But he has fun in this. It's kind of a... It was like if Oliver Reed did a kung fu movie back in the 70s. Wall-to-wall action, over-the-top ridiculous action sequences, which you expect in a kung fu movie like this. So kind of like if Tarantino making Grindhouse or Robert Rodriguez making Machete. This is the RZA's version of the Grindhouse feature, and
yes,
it's a lot of
yes,
fun.
Yes!
Also on Blu-ray this week, Academy Award-nominated film The Sessions. This is the film with John Hawkes, Helen Hunt, and William H. Macy. Hawkes is a writer who lives in an iron lung, and he finally decides at the age of 38 he wants to lose his virginity. So he brings in a sex therapist played by Helen Hunt, who got an Academy Award nomination for Best Supporting Actress for this. And gentlemen and ladies, you see a lot of Helen Hunt in this film, and it's really cool. Besides that, though, it's a really... It's a good performance by Hunt, by Hawks, who probably had a good shot at, I thought, and a lot of people thought, he should have been up for Best Actor in this category. Macy plays a priest who talks to Hawks' character. But this film, along with Quartet, which we talked about a couple weeks ago, and Hope Springs with Meryl Streep and Tommy Lee Jones, this is a film that treats sex and sexuality in a mature way, not as a punchline, not as a pratfall, not as nudity as a joke. That's not happening in this. This is two people doing an act, a physical act, and it's handled with a great deal of respect and maturity. And that is really, despite my snarky comment about Helen Hunt dropping her clothes, it's a really good film, really solid. Go check it out. And finally, the flawed documentary, but I still am recommending it, Bully, which, of course, takes a look at bullying that happens in schools throughout the country. And I know that's been a big subject and of recent memory. It's kind of one of those preaching to the choir documentaries. We know bullying is bad. We get to follow a few kids who are victims of bullying. I would have liked to have seen the filmmakers maybe try to interview a bully or even better, the bully's parents. Because those are the people that aren't going to see this film, but it would have been interesting to see a balance of that. But it does bring up a conversation. It does start a conversation between your children and yourself and other people in your community as well as in your school. That's a good thing. I'm all for that.
Now that was a good movie.
Now, some of the old titles that are out on Blu-ray, guess what? Because of Skyfall, they're putting out more Bond films on Blu-ray. I don't know if they have any new special features compared to the last time they were put out on Blu-ray. So, but for this week, Tomorrow Never Dies, yeah.
Sheryl Crow song.
Oh, yeah. Lance's favorite. But this is the one with Michelle Yeoh. She's also one of the top Bond women, not villain. Diamonds Are Forever. Sean Connery gets a big paycheck and shows up and then goes away. That's one Emma has not seen yet. Octopussy, that's ridiculous stuff with Roger Moore. The Living Daylights, which I guess I need to check the Dalton films out once again. On Her Majesty's Secret Service, which Kobe will be watching soon since he's had it for 5 months or longer. You Only Live Twice, that's Connery. The Spy Who Loved Me, my first James Bond film in a theater back in 1978. And Barbara Bach, Yeah. A double feature of Quantum of Solace and Casino Royale. So there's that. Stepping stone film for Quantum. Really enjoyed Casino Royale. And finally, A View to a Kill with 75-year-old Roger Moore getting to bed with Grace Jones.
What was the one with Halle Berry before?
That was
Casino
Die
Royale.
Another Day.
Yes.
That was Brosnan's last one. So, yes. Okay. We didn't get a chance to do this last week, but I want to go into the archives briefly before we have a couple of things to share with you. But Michael Winner died a few weeks ago, and of course last week with Danny Boom, we talked about Michael Winner as a restaurant critic. One of the films that came out on Columbia's archives, these are movies that you can only buy on the website, you can't buy them in stores, or as Columbia Pictures probably said to me,
yeah, we'll burn it for like $5.
In their case, 20. But it's a 1973 film called The Stone Killer, which was a collaboration between Michael Winner and Charles Bronson. Of course, Winner was best known for directing the first three Death Wish films. But they worked together prior to Death Wish. They did Shadow's Land, The Mechanic, which is probably the best of these films.
Didn't they just remake The Mechanic?
With Jason Statham, yeah, and Ben Foster. Not worth checking out. And then The Stone Killer, which seemed like it was going to be Charles Bronson's version of Dirty Harry. He plays a New York cop that accidentally kills a 17-year-old criminal, and he's forced to resign and move out to California. And while he's there, he gets teamed up with a racist cop played by Ralph Waite, for you fans of The Waltons. And he's out to get a mob boss played by Martin Balsam. They would, of course, reunite together in Death Wish 3. But it is great 70s score, lots of 70s orchestra and synth music by Roy Budd. It sounds like it wants to be Herbie Hancock meets Lalo Schifrin. But interesting. Also, another footnote, playing his superior officer in Stone Killer, Norman Fell, and an even smaller role as a rookie cop, John Ritter.
Huh.
So a little pre-Three's Company. So, anyway, it's a 70s action film. There's a car chase scene with a motorcycle, and yes, they do smash into a fruit cart and go through they crash through windows. But yeah, it's almost a potboiler. No, it's a decent couple hours, like a lot of these films have been. You know, it's a turn your brain off action film from the 70s.
I have a response for that, but I can't find it now because I got so much stuff in this folder.
Oh, great.
Oh, here it is.
It's a nice way to spend 2 hours in a movie theater that you won't wish you got back.
There you go.
That's good. Yeah. That's good. So, and because Quartet is finally open, and that's the film directed by Dustin Hoffman, that's with Tom Courtney, Maggie Smith, and Billy Connolly, and Michael Gambon, I went back to a film that, and it was also the screenplay by Ronald Harwood. Ronald Harwood, for me, and for a lot of people, is best known for the 1983 costume drama The Dresser, which teamed up Harwood with Tom Courtney. It stars Albert Finney as a Shakespearean actor in World War, and is the leader of a tyrannical leader of an acting company in World War II era England. And Courtney plays Norman, his dresser, who tends to every demand of the actor, just known as Sir. Really good performances by Courtney and by Finney. Both got Academy Award nominations. This is also up for Best Picture. It was also directed by Peter Yates, who's given us everything from Summer Holiday to Breaking Away. Yes.
Oh, yes.
Shot at IU. Anyway, really nice backstage drama and comedy as far as the looks of an acting company. Edward Fox is in this film as well. And Finney has a great combination of being completely domineering and then at times completely sad because he's getting near the end of his life and he has to do huge theatrical tasks like King Lear and Othello. So it's an old title. It's a Center of the Video Store pick that's worth checking out. Ladies and gentlemen, we're gonna get to my chat with Chef Lydia in a little bit. But first, to share with you this, and I have to thank Rick Dawson for this. There's a series of educational videos, DVDs of educational films from the 50s through the 70s, and a lot of these look like Mystery Science Theater material. And I have to share this with you because this just cracked me up. This is called Good Health Practices. It looks like it was done in the mid to late 50s. It's in color. This is also the era where, you know, young men's swimsuits look like underpants. Really bad. But this is and it's, of course, got that great educational film narration that's going to talk to you about rest practices, health practices, but most importantly, and way too much time on this, toilet practices. Ladies and gentlemen, turn off the lights, get the AV Club, and enjoy.
Did you ever think how much fun it is just to be alive when you feel healthy and well? Judy and Jim are well almost all of the time because they follow good health practices. And because they are healthy, they have fun almost all of the time, doing all kinds of things. Of course, anyone can have fun playing in the snow or at the beach, but Judy and Jim have fun doing their work too because they are healthy and well. Good eating practices help Judy and Jim stay healthy and well. Jim knows that his body must have food, just like an automobile must have gasoline. Gasoline is the fuel that a car's engine must have to keep running. The engine uses the fuel to make power, to move the car. To go fast on the highways. To climb steep hills. Your engine needs fuel too. Food is the fuel that you must have to get strength for play and for work. Your body uses fuel all of the time, even when you're sleeping. Yes, brain work takes a great deal of fuel. Different foods must go together to make the best fuel for you. Mothers know how to put these foods together to make healthful meals. When the foods are together the right way, we call it a balanced meal. See if you can name the foods in the balanced meal that Judy serves to Jim. Young children don't have to know all the ways that food should go together. Your job is to learn good eating practices. First, eat slowly and chew thoroughly. Food makes the best fuel when it is eaten slowly and chewed thoroughly. Second, eat all of the food that is served to you. Then you won't run out of fuel when your engine needs it most. Third, don't eat too many sweets. Sweets are party food for special times. Fruits always are a good dessert. And fruit helps you to follow good toilet practices. Here is another way in which you are like an auto. There is always some waste to get rid of when the engine uses fuel. That's why cars have exhaust pipes. There is always waste to get rid of when your engine uses the food you eat for fuel. Good toilet practices means getting rid of the waste at the right times in the right ways. It's a very important practice to wash your hands each time after going to the toilet. Jim and Judy go to the toilet after breakfast each morning and before going to bed each night. You should follow the practice of going at regular times like this. But of course, you should go at other times too. Always go to the toilet when you feel like going. Don't be bashful or silly about toilet habits. Remember, an engine can't run when the exhaust is stopped up. Some foods help to keep you from getting stopped up. It's a good toilet habit to eat plenty of fruits, green vegetables, hot cereals, and dark bread. They all help you stay clean inside. Staying clean inside and outside is a part of being healthy. So, staying clean is another important health practice. Judy and Jim bathe before breakfast each morning on school days. Some people bathe before bedtime each night. It isn't so important just when you bathe, but washing all over once a day is a fine practice for good health. Keep your hair clean. Long hair, like Judy's, needs extra washing and brushing to be clean and glossy. In clean clothes, fresh as a daisy, Judy is ready for school. Jim likes a shower better than a bath. Either one is fine, so long as you use plenty of soap and plenty of hot water and plenty of elbow grease, like Jim is doing. Jim does a good job of washing his hair, too. Spick and span in his clean clothes, Jim is ready for morning inspection. Do you think Jim will pass inspection? Well, let's see. Neck clean? Yes, indeed. Ears? No dirt there. Now, what about those hands? Clean as a whistle. Jim follows good practices in keeping his hands clean. Hands will get dirty. So remember, after playing games, after playing with animals, and always after going to the toilet, wash your hands with plenty of soap and hot water. Wash your hands before handling food, before setting the table, and especially before brushing your teeth. Can you think why these before rules are so very important? Keep your fingernails short and clean. When dirt gets under your nails, even soap and water can't wash it out. It takes some digging to get nails as clean as Jim's. Now, who is this? A football player. And who is this topsy-turvy person? Why, it's Judy, having fun at the beach. Yes, the beach is a wonderful place to have fun, if you are careful to guard against sunburn, and if you don't get too tired. You know, even a football player needs to rest once in a while. When you are tired, you're like a toy car with its spring run down. Rest is what winds the spring, so you will be ready to run again. It looks like Jim's spring is wound up already. Looks like Jim is all ready to run again. There, you see? Jim is not tired now. But good rest practices mean resting when you should rest, not just when you feel tired. On vacation days, when they're playing hard, Judy and Jim take a rest after lunch. They take it easy for at least an hour to give their food a chance to digest. Then they're ready to play again until it's time to go home. Getting plenty of sleep is the most important rest practice. Young people need much more sleep than grown-ups. And remember, other health practices when you get ready for bed. Going to the toilet to stay clean inside, washing with soap and water to stay clean outside, and brushing your teeth to keep them clean are good health practices to follow every night at bedtime. Being clean, outside and in, helps you to get a good sleep. Your body rests better when it is clean. A healthful, balanced supper helps you get a good sleep too. And while you sleep, your body will use the food to build strength for another day. You see, health practices go together to build strong bodies for work and for play. There are so many beautiful and interesting things in the world to see and to do. Why not let good health practices help you to happy days all of your life?
Always follow good health practices and listen to Film Sociology Fridays at 5 on WFYI HD2. And now for Matthew Sosie's chat with Lydia Bastianich.
So Lydia, I know you had a cookbook released in October, which is one of the reasons why you're here in town. This is your, I believe it, number 8?
It is.
So now tell us a little bit, for those who haven't picked it up yet, about Lydia's favorites recipes.
Well, it's a book where, you know, I had to give it some thought. The publisher asked, I do a book every 2 years. This came out in between. And the publisher, I guess, given the situation of publishing and all that, wanted to create a little excitement. He says, Lydia, why don't you get a collection of your favorites? What do your viewers claim as their favorites? And let's put it together. And, you know, I thought about it and I said, that's a great idea because, you know, there's 8 books, 2 years, that's a whole generation in between. And so maybe they wouldn't go for my first book, but I said, I got to put a collection together. So it's a collection of delicious recipes that are very doable, that you know, emphasize this sort of kind of cooking right, cooking seasonally, cooking for the family, nutritionally sound, but simple and delicious.
Even an 11-year-old chef could do those.
I think with a little help, absolutely. I mean, you know, exactly. I understand you cook with your daughter, huh?
I follow her 3 feet behind, like my wife at home.
You know your place.
Yeah, I try. Yes, dear. I was joking. Now, I wondered, like, when I saw this, it seemed like in the music world, this would be called a greatest hits collection. I'm saying, but it's not necessarily you're taking recipes from this book or this book or that book. It's basically recipes from your own personal collection.
It is recipes because in the books, ultimately, my recipes end up. So,
right.
You know, it sort of trickles down to that. But yes, these are recipes that I continue to cook and be favors in my family that my kids love, my grandkids, and that I get those emails and repeated kind of get questioned about them, and they are being used by my viewers a lot. I mean, they're popular out there, so they really work well.
Now, I know recipes are like children, but can you give us a couple highlights that people can see?
Well, certainly if you're going to I love soups. So I love soups. So you have the escarole and bean soup, which is a simple soup. We have the wedding soup, which is the soup with the little meatballs. And, mm-hmm. you know, the kids are all those meatballs. And it's almost a complete meal. You know, you get a great soup with the proteins in there. Kids eat the vegetables with the meatballs, and it's great. But it tastes better. So, and then the pasta. Spaghetti garlic and oil, spaghetti clam sauce, a good bolognese is in there. You know, all those basics. A great marinara sauce is in there. And then, you know, you have a great marinara. You can add shrimp to it. You can add chicken, and you can take it in any directions. Fish, the shrimp scampi, the clams casino, fried calamari, calamari fritti, meat, ossobuco, that braise, you know, tender, sort of that falls off the bone, with some barley risotto with it, the milanese, parmigiana, all of those, stuffed veal chop, mm-hmm. Braised short ribs. You go to dessert now?
Sure.
All right, let's go to dessert. The strudel, tiramisu. I do a version with a lemon tiramisu, lemon flavored tiramisu.
Really?
Yeah, it's really easy and good.
It seems like there's a lot of restaurants that do tiramisu. Is one of those items that shows up on a lot of Italian and actually non-Italian restaurants as well on dessert, and it seems like everybody's doing it. But it kind of reminds me of fried calamari. Everybody does it, but it's hard to find one that really stands out as superior.
Absolutely. You know, it's a simple dessert to make, and yet again, in its simplicity, it's difficult in the sense that, you know, you get all the best ingredients, a great mascarpone, and then that you don't over whip it, or that you don't over soak it, or that the coffee that you soak it in is just, you know, the right flavor and sugar. The beauty of this recipe is that you can change it, you know, like I did. You know, you can make it now in the winter. A citrus, mm-hmm. lemon, you know, Meyer lemons are coming soon. They're going to be delicious. In the springtime, you can turn it into a peach tiramisu, a little bit peach schnapps and fresh peaches poached. You know, you get yourself a great dessert.
Can I hold your hand while you talk about this?
All right.
Again, listeners, my wife is laughing at me right now. I'm going to call up my film show producer about this. He's not a soup fan, and so I kind of hit him on the head about it a little bit. What is the secret for making a really superior soup? When it comes to stock or obviously fresh ingredients, what are some of the fundamentals?
I think it is extracting the flavors of whatever you're cooking into this soup, because soup is liquid, so you want all of those flavors to come out and get into that liquid.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're doing a meat-based soup, whether it's chicken, lots of bones, you know, the breasts won't do much for a chicken soup, you know. So get chicken necks, chicken wings, chicken backs. It's less expensive, and it really creates a, then, you know, the vegetables are very important. good carrots, leeks. Don't forget the onion family is the one secret element that I'm going to share with all of you. It's not really a secret. Is the rinds of grana padana and parmigiano. You know, we all love that grated cheese. You go and it's expensive and all of that. What do you do with the rinds? Well, scrape the outside well. Wash it and then throw it in your soup. It's going to add a whole other dimension of flavor.
And I assume shells, fish shells, or mollusks for seafood stock.
Exactly. If you're doing seafood based, then it's about the shells and the, of the mollusks, of the shrimps and whatever, lobster carcasses or whatever. But the one prerequisite is that it must be absolutely fresh. You can't keep those shells in the refrigerator 3 days, 4 days, and then make a great soup with them.
No, that just opens up your fridge door and bad things waft out.
Exactly. And if you're doing kind of vegetable soup, the secret ingredient is dry porcini, dry mushrooms.
Okay.
You add a little dry mushrooms. I usually take them, and you can soak them, reconstitute them, then chop them up and throw them in. Or dry like that, you put them in a little kind of food processor, and they get pulverized, and you throw all that kind of porcini dust in the soup, and it really makes it good.
Now, I'm curious, how do you prepare carbonara at home?
Carbonara, it's simple. It's onions, bacon, and I use a little bit of the pasta water. Not even, you could use stock, but if you render your bacon well, nice and crispy with onion. And, I like it lardoons. I like a little texture on my bacon. When I'm eating the carbonara, I want to feel the bacon under my teeth. And you render that, then you wilt the onions, and then you take the water of the pasta because, the pasta should be already cooking because it takes about the same to make the sauce and the cooking of the pasta. You take a little bit of pasta water and you kind of zoom, the whole thing kind of gets bubbling and boiling, and then you season it with some fresh pepper, and it's as simple as that. Then, of course, the carbonara, the rich carbonara and all of that is tying it all with the egg yolk at the end. So you have taken the pasta, put it in this sauce that you made, and you kind of tossed it around, and off the fire you take that egg yolk and you kind of fold it in. Everybody's so afraid of raw egg yolk. So what I recommend is taking the yolk, maybe putting it in a sieve and dunking it into the boiling pasta water so it gets a little kind of cooked, and then you mix it in with your carbonara. Off the fire, because otherwise you're going to get scrambled eggs. Yeah.
My daughter calls that breakfast carbonara. This happened a couple times. Now, cream at all? Because I know some people do both or one or the other.
I don't use cream. Cream is the great equalizer in the cuisine. It sort of pulls all the sauces together for you. Mm-hmm. And it has a good taste, but I think it... I'm not used to a lot of cream, so I don't. It richens it up too much. But if in doubt, and if it's not coming out, the cream will save you.
Okay. See, words to live by. So I'm curious. When it's movie night at home, what do you snack on? Do you make stuff by hand, or do you make your own concessions?
We do. I'm thinking. Okay. Popcorn is not such an unusual. We like popcorn.
Sure.
Yeah. So that's not so unusual. Pieces of cheese, a little kind of, I have the chunk of grana padana there with a little knife, and people take, we like nuts with that. I like the walnuts or almonds. But sometimes if things are left from lunch or whatever, a little nibble of anything that's left over, it's okay.
Excellent. So what have you watched recently? I know you're on the road, but just I'm curious.
You know what we rewatched? We had some friends over. Life is Beautiful with Benigni.
At his the right tone of clown prince and touching storytelling.
Exactly. The Italian element that he brings to such a deep and profound message. Mm-hmm. It kind of has you light and heavy, but at the end it leaves you thinking.
It fits on that one because I know when people have used the words Holocaust and comedy in the same breath, I think a lot of people tense up. And and I know Benigni prior to that had done Italian comedies, some of which came to the United States. I know before this, infamously, he was Son of the Pink Panther, which it's kind of like taking somebody's skills and only seeing about 10% of it. Mm-hmm. And I know with Life is Beautiful, obviously, he had much more creative control. And yeah, I think even to this day, it still rides the right balance of funny and moving and especially with that subject matter.
It does. And, you know, what we were amazed, and maybe we thought, you know, when we saw it the first time, I didn't realize the acting of the son, of the little boy, it was wonderful.
It was not a Hollywood kid.
No.
Very simple.
Yeah. And it was very, very much an Italian kid. You know, I could relate to that.
I would say, what makes him an Italian kid for those who... Because it's been about 15 years, I believe, since the film came out.
Oh, it is. I think. I think, you know, he's kind of complete trust in the father and then slowly realizing what makes him Italian. He's the way he answered his father and the way he followed his father, the image of his father. I don't know. There was just something, his movements, his, of course, the way he was dressed. It was very Italian.
I think of also, when you mentioned that, a kid that came to mind was the child in Cinema Paradiso. Where
the same.
Right.
The same kind of naivete, but yet at the same time, there is an adultness. There's a maturity behind that naivete, you know, the reality of life.
Mm-hmm. And for me, that was, as a teenager, that was a Cinema Paradiso was one of, you know, literally growing up around the movies. And it was, especially a movie house in a village like that, it was almost like football in this city where, or in this country where, you know, towns shut down and they all go to the movies.
Do you know what I remember when I was a child talking about towns shutting down was the movies in the open.
Yes, and they do that in there as well.
Exactly. I remember as a kid, we used to, that was the big thing. We used to go, and in the town they had this the arena, like the arena in Rome, something like that. And in there, there would be the movies in the open given, and not every time could you afford, you know, to go in and pay. And sometimes we would know the secret, you know, going up that roof, you can see it going up. But it was wonderful out there under the skies and the breeze, watching the movies. And, you know, usually they didn't have movies just for adults, you know, for children.
Sure.
There was adults. So there was that intermingling of child play and then coming back with the adults and watching the movie. And so great memories.
Do you remember any of the movies that you watched outside?
Oh God, I don't remember. But I think what was the Italian comedian? It was like Charlie Chaplin. Oh God, my mother is gonna.
If your mother's listening, we'll let you.
But you know what we did watch also kind of classical operas and, you know, kind of singing. We watched that a lot. And that was nice. Not only you didn't watch it as much as a child, but you played around. And it was kind of it entered your system through not through the visual, but through the sounds and all of that.
Correct.
Yeah. You kind of got educated with all of that in a beautiful setting and not in a kind of, you have to.
Right. Sit down, watch, study.
Exactly.
Which I try not to do with my kids' film correspondent known as my daughter. So, well, Lydia, I really, really appreciate you taking time and hanging out here on Film Sociology.
Thanks, Matthew.
Silent breed is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
Chat with Lydia Bassianis, host of Lydia's Interview, weekend here on WFYI 1. That will about do it for another edition of Film Sociology. Go see a good movie. You deserve it. You're listening to Film Sociology, film talk show on WFYI HD to the point, WFYI.org. We gone. Good night, Fort Myers.